As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hi there, this is From the Rookery End, a podcast about Watford Football Club brought to you by The Athletic, and this is Adam Leventhal back again for our regular Thursday edition, the Watford correspondent for The Athletic, and alongside me this week is John. A very good day to you, how are you?
A good day, a good week, Adam. It's been a great week after that win away at Goodison Park.
It has indeed, hasn't it? It's felt good. It's felt a bit of a relief just to sort of think, yeah, I can walk with a bit of a swagger. Mike, are you walking with a bit of a swagger?
Yeah, well, I'm floating, Adam. I'm not walking anywhere. I'm still on cloud nine. But I didn't share a little story. I was at Goodison, which made it a great day on Saturday. It was absolutely a fabulous weekend for me, because on Friday night, the night before the Everton game, I went to see a band, Norwegian rock band called Bakassa, at the Camden Underworld in the mosh pit on Friday night, just to blow away a few cobwebs. Anyway, they were in the bar afterwards, and I said to my mate, "Oh, come on, let's go and say hello to these guys. I love a photo. I love a selfie with a celeb." And anyway, we went up to the lead singer, and I said, "Hi, I enjoyed the show." And he cut me off, and he went, "I know you. You're doing a Watford podcast." So how about that? This band that I actually saw them support Metallica in Copenhagen. That's where we found out about. So From the Rookery End and Watford have reached the Norwegian rock fraternity.
Joshua King. It must be Joshua King. There you go. There's a link. Joshua King fans, and he's gone for all the content. That's amazing.
That is brilliant. Well, aside from sort of rocking our heads to the amazing performance of Joshua King, which we will of course touch upon in this podcast, I just wanted to sort of run you through what we're going to be dealing with, and the first section I've sort of called From Everton to Beyond, because, you know, we want to just try and build on that performance. We will be just having a little bit of a look back as well to some of the things that we were saying prior to the Everton game, just to maybe help with a little bit of context. We'll obviously be looking ahead to Southampton and how challenging that may well be, having come down from cloud nine. And also, at the end of the podcast, we're going to be answering your questions, but also we're going to just be reflecting on a piece that came out on Wednesday on The Athletic, which was heavily led by the cracking interview that both Kelly Summers and Kate Lewis did on the previous edition of From the Rookery End, the one at the weekend. And that inspired me to do a piece, and we're going to have a little bit of a chat about that. But let's start with the 5-2 victory. And it was so unexpected, wasn't it? I mean, if you were to put it into the context of the most unexpected victory, where would that rank? John, for you, what's your most sort of unexpected Watford victory?
I mean, there's always those things. There's those classic ones from back in the day, which I missed. And when we asked, this conversation came up on our Twitter feed, at Watford Podcast, and there's a Kaiserslautern game because it was a second leg big comeback, and the Southampton 7-2, another big second leg comeback, which of course is a dead art now. There are no second legs to be had, really. I think for me personally, the Arsenal 2-1, I think mainly because I went to that game with not a hope, not an inkling of hope after losing in the FA Cup to Millwall the week before. And we'd all been like really worried, saying, let's rest all the good players. Let's play all the good players against Millwall and get through the FA Cup, and let's forget about Arsenal because nothing's ever going to happen. But we got the most amazing win, and I will always remember being in the away end, just my mind being blown, just from what we saw sort of happen in front of us, and be very, very nervous, of course, towards the end.
I mean, I think we have to just mention though the Kaiserslautern one. To come back from effectively the dead with so many injuries, and our first season in Europe was just, if I guess it felt like a continuation of the Watford story at that time. Anything was possible under Graham Taylor, so perhaps fans weren't as surprised by that one. The Southampton one, though, when we came back to win, was it the second leg was 7-1 in the League Cup? I think what some people might forget about that particular fixture is that Watford were actually in the second division at that stage, and Southampton were flying high in the top flight. So to come back, and I think we lost the first leg 4-0, didn't we, at the Dell, and then won that the second 7-1. Just absolutely extraordinary. And I think there's a lot of people who it was so unexpected that probably didn't turn up that normally might have done. So yeah, two massive, massive games there. But I think, especially in context of it being on Merseyside at the weekend, that year when we beat Liverpool 1-0 at Anfield, when we went up under GT with Tommy Mooney scoring.
That is a very surprising win, but I think it comes at the wrong point of the season. That season, it almost felt like, hey, we've done it against Liverpool, we could do it again. And we just didn't.
Well, we did, didn't we? A couple of years ago, it stopped the Liverpool juggernaut with that 3-0 win. I think that will be hard to top, wouldn't it, really, as the most unexpected, probably not just the most unexpected result in Watford's recent history, but possibly in the history of the Premier League.
I would say that Liverpool win was the most incredible one. And the fact that it was also on a leap year as well, February the 29th, it just gives that extra mystique as well. So, but I suppose, you know, when you split it now from going from Liverpool to Everton, as we did, the transition to that Everton victory last weekend also puts it very, very high, because no one was expecting that, which is absolutely fantastic. And it was great to be there, sat at the tightest press box in the country, old school ground. It was absolutely fantastic. And I have to just say this, there was a great comedy moment, and I think I highlighted it on social media, but if you missed it, it was just brilliant. Obviously, Everton didn't perform very well in the final 12 minutes, as we know, conceding 4 goals. But it was absolutely perfect comedy timing. Everyone was sort of booing and hissing. And then there was a local journalist sort of tapping away on his laptop, and a fan walked past, older guy, and he just sort of leaned over and just went, I hope you know how to spell shit. And I just thought it was so good. It was done in good humour, but I just thought that was absolutely brilliant. And it was also quite heartening after sort of probably feeling much the same, Watford fans, when we were leaving Vicarage Road after the defeat against Liverpool. Many people were probably thinking that themselves, but it was actually quite heartening to know that other teams do have issues as well. But let's just concentrate on what Watford did do well. And before we sort of really get our teeth into it, and you did, like, I really, really enjoyed listening to the podcast, the last episode, for various reasons, but just the joy and the elation and the feel good from it really, really came through, obviously. So I would implore everyone to go and have a listen to that one as well. But just in terms of just trying to sort of keep a lid a little bit on the enthusiasm, I just wanted to just reflect on a couple of questions that we were asking before the Everton game and after the Liverpool defeat. And there were so many questions about recruitment. And we did see Joshua King score a hat-trick. We did see Juraj Kutska score an all-important equaliser at 2-2. And then we saw Emmanuel Dennis wrap up the victory with the fifth goal. We saw Ozan Tufan probably have his best game in a Watford shirt. We saw Jeremy Ngakia take a step up in that right-back position. Cucho Hernandez did very, very well on the left-hand side. Moussa Sissoko did pretty well as a captain. And even William Troost-Ekong, let's give him a shout as well, because I think he was probably the best of two centre-halves playing against a decent attack at times from Everton. Not great, but he had a good game. So what I wanted to say is that there was a lot of people sort of saying, how can you say that the recruitment has been good? I've never said that the recruitment has been great, but we did just get a little bit of a snapshot into some of the players that have come in and have made an impact. And my point was that it is far too early to make a definitive judgment on a team's recruitment when you've only played, what is it, 9-10 games of the season. And I think that it's almost just a little bit of a reminder to go, yes, I think, was it Malky Mackay? That was always his saying, you know, never too high, never too low. You know, yeah. So I think it's just an almost a little bit of, it was a performance to actually go, ah, okay, there are players in there. And it was great to see them perform well. So I was quite encouraged by the fact that there were some players that have been brought in that were fresh, that are growing into being at a new club and performing well under a new head coach that seemed, and I wanted to get your take on it, seemed to have really, really been able to improve the offering of the team by having that extra time with them, which is really heartening. What was your take on it, Mike, in terms of how Claudio Ranieri adapted to the job?
Well, I think the difference was marked, wasn't it? And yes, there was a huge gulf in opposition that we were facing. And I think we do have to put a big caveat on the fact that Everton did capitulate pretty spectacularly. They were missing a few players as well. So it was nothing like the challenge that we faced the previous week at home to Liverpool. But that said, in terms of organisation, willingness to get to the ball first, and perhaps above anything else, to ask questions of the opposition, it felt like we were set up to do that. And I think that's the one thing that's frustrated me repeatedly. As regular listeners to the podcast will know, I've been less than impressed with our performances so far. And I think the main reason for that is because we simply haven't looked set up to give it a go, to ask questions of the opposition, to make them worry. And that was the case on Saturday. Yes, we conceded goals at poor times, very, very early, and then pretty late on, which did feel like it might be a nail in the coffin. But they, throughout the piece, they were threatening. And I think that doesn't... Josh King was very much the focal point, and I think he held the ball up perfectly. But he was ably assisted by virtually everyone else on the pitch, and they just felt more able. And I think you have to... When you take into consideration the varying things that have changed in the last 2-3 weeks, the big one is the head coach. They're the same players playing similar opposition that we've struggled against, and they looked far more able than they have done up until this point. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Adam, to temper expectations and to look at it in context. I would say that, you know, one swallow doesn't make a spring, and we do have to be careful. It's given us something to build on. But in terms of how they looked more organised, they looked more focused, they look more like a team, and looking like a team is one of the things that is the minimum you can ask. But we were miles off that previously.
I loved I had two favourite moments. One was Cucho Hernandez being really feisty and getting in your face. You know, that sort of says, if he's doing that, he just looks like the most loveliest fellow in the world. You know, that sort of attitude that was going to it. But there was a moment where Pickford's trying to play the ball out within his box to his two central defenders, and there isn't a Watford player anywhere near him, and literally the nearest player must have been in the centre circle. And I always felt that was Ranieri going, look, lads, I've been in this business a long time. I don't care, Pep, if you've got this new fancy thing you want to do by playing the ball out all the way from the back and stretching the play. I know what I'm doing. Lads, let's just keep it simple. Those moments of this character coming through, of the team, but of Ranieri as well. But I think the biggest thing for me is the fact that we took the chance. We took the chance for seeing a slightly weaker Everton. We took the chance during the game, and Ranieri saw that chance. Well, maybe he didn't see the chance, but you know, the substitutions he made, those two, that double substitution, clearly were, you know, planned out. It wasn't a reaction to Richarlison's goal. But it was the fact that they could see and they exploited the Everton mentality within that game and that sort of atmosphere that was going around Goodison Park. And I think those are the things that I'm putting onto Ranieri, really, and the players sort of saying, we'll do it, lad. We'll do it, boss. We'll take it on.
And it bears out in the stats as well, because I was just having a little look in terms of the way that it looked. And it's obviously really important sometimes that you, when you watch the game and you get the opportunity, obviously a lot of people that will have been there at Goodison Park, but if you were just watching at home, you only see what the camera's showing you. But just in general terms, we looked as a team across the piece, as in the pitch, just a lot more comfortable and a lot more organised. But in particular, we wanted to have the ball further up more often. And that was something that, let's be fair to Xisco Muñoz, who is, congratulations, the new head coach of Huesca in the Spanish second division. So we wish him all the well with all the best with that. You know, that's what he was trying, or he was hoping for, but he just couldn't necessarily get it done. In terms of the stats, in terms of where we had the ball in the attacking third 173 times, which is more than any other match this season in terms of touches. And if you compare it to, you know, the opening game, which was very much a, you know, hit them on the counter, we only had 78 touches in the attacking third in that game. Even the game, you know, that we won against Norwich City, it was 138. The defeat against Wolves, 114. Against Tottenham, 94. And then in the recent really sort of troubling performances against Leeds, it was 85. Against Liverpool, it was just 66. So it just shows that we were able to find a link between defence and attack far more often. And I just wanted to refer to something, because I'll be honest, this is how my mind was thinking ahead of the Everton game. It was what Rafa Benitez said. I'll tell you what he said before. This was in his programme notes. He talked about, you know, the fact that he'd been competing with Claudio Ranieri in three countries, going all the way back to 1998, et cetera, et cetera. He was always a tactical, clever guy. And he had an incredible enthusiasm for football that you see today. After another week working with his new club, I'm certain that Claudio will bring a Watford team that is very compact and organised and ready to exploit any loss of focus. Now, I was, after what had happened against Liverpool, that could have been a stick to beat Claudio Ranieri if he hadn't have delivered the performance that he did. But thankfully, he did. And it showed that by having his players with him for another week, he was able to get them far more organised. And I remember DCW saying, you know, we need momentum. And I was saying that, look, all we need is just something, some sort of foundation stone. And hopefully that Everton performance has now provided that, and they can build on that. And I think that there is just a sort of a general feel that they have now set a little bit of a benchmark. Is that fair, Mike?
They have to go on from now. And I think we're obviously still very excited and pleased about what we've seen. We've thought for a long time that there are decent players in there, and we're not getting enough from those good players. And so what I think what we've realised now is that our best performers have to be performing pretty much near their best more often than not in this division. That's the reality of it. We've seen what happens when they don't hit those heights, and it's not very pretty, is it? But on the flip side, and more recently, they've shown they can do it. And if they're going to be successful in the division, we have to be honest, I think it's still going to be a difficult season. Staying up is the be-all and end-all. It's going to be close. We've still got a very, very difficult clutch of games, and it remains to be seen how they react to adversity, which is almost certain to happen in the coming weeks. But yeah, they haven't really got anywhere to hide now, because they've shown what can happen when they click. You know, the confidence was flowing through them from back to front. They knew where the runs were coming. They were playing balls over their shoulders. There were little flicks. Everything was done at a sort of a yard quicker. They all looked half a foot taller. So they've shown what they can do. And I think John's point about them sensing blood and dealing with it and taking an opportunity is really important, because that's what they have to do in those sort of games. Manchester City, Chelsea, Liverpool, they're not going to be the ones that define our season. The games where we've got a chance are, we won't take the chances unless they're up to speed, unless they're at 90, 95, 100% performance level. So they've left themselves nowhere to hide, which is a good thing, because they should want to go on now and perform. You know, especially the key performers like Joshua King, who's making up for lost time with his career. Sissoko's got, you know, there's plenty of players in that side with a lot to prove and lots to sort of look forward to and work towards. So we've got what you wanted, Adam. You're right. We just needed to almost get that anchor in the ground, almost need just a flag to say, right, Watford are in the Premier League. We are going to be competitive in matches. And they've done that now, but they need to sort of march forward, and they need to carry on doing it.
I think that's a really, really important point. And it reverts back to the first point that I was making about recruitment and things like that, that when you have a whole group of players that have a point to prove, that are hungry, you never really know which way it's going to go. And it's great when you see, you know, if people make assessments and fans make assessments simply by seeing one performance here or there, they're sort of ignoring the fire that might be burning within. And that is where those big performances can come from. And we certainly saw that from Josh King in particular. And he spoke about it really well, I thought. You know, obviously having been rejected ultimately by Everton, they didn't give him his contract. And I wrote about that in the piece after the game, gave a bit of insight into how that all sort of came about and stuff. And I just wanted to throw in one of the questions that we've been sent in on Twitter from Michael. Thank you very much for sending it in. And thanks very much to everyone for sending all those questions. I wanted to get some views on how far Josh King can go with us if kept fit. Could he be our new Kapu, where he's far too good for a club like us, but age, injury record is on our side? You know, we don't want to get too carried away, but the way that he did play, the variety that we saw in the hat-trick that he scored, the comfort that he had on the ball, that instinct that he showed, I think he could be a huge asset. And one of the points that I made in the piece is that he was brought in to be the new number nine. It wasn't necessarily going to be as a direct replacement for Troy Deeney. They may well have been in the same team up until January or for the last year or whatever it was. But, you know, it has now fallen to him and he can be the number nine. And he's very much determined to be the big guy. And it's interesting when you think, and on the international stage, you know, you forget he's playing second fiddle to Erling Haaland. And there, you know, now he is at a club where he is number one. He's just scored a hat trick. He's going to be sort of coursing. There'll be confidence coursing through his veins and he'll be wanting to build on that. Obviously, we won't be able to see what Emmanuel Dennis does because he, you know, picked up his booking. But we will see what happens with Ismaïla Sarr, having been, you know, taken off, how he reacts. So that'll be great to see. And there are lots of players that want to prove a point. Cucho Hernandez, for example, you know, in a new country, wanted to do it. We saw how Juraj Kutsker celebrated. We saw how Moussa Sissoko, you know, he stepped away from Tottenham. He wants to prove a point. Ozan Toufan, he's had question marks about his sort of temperament and things like that. So, you know, he's kicking on. And all of those defenders as well, they won't have missed the criticism that will have come to their way after the Liverpool defeat. They will want to prove a point to show that they can continue to step up. They might not be able to, who knows? But there has been also a new arrival. And one last thing I wanted to say about the Everton game is, and I haven't got round to doing it because I had a couple of days off with the kids during half term, but I am going to do it. I'm going to actually see what Nicolas Nkoulou did in the game because I have not got a clue. Well, after he came on, it was just all up one end. I literally have got not one clue. And I haven't even looked at the stats, but I will look at them at some stage. I don't even know if he touched the ball.
He didn't make match of the day, that's for sure.
He didn't, but it was great, you know. And so we've got, you know, we have had a new arrival as well. So we need to kick on and talk about Southampton. But I just wanted to remind everyone that if you do want to be part of The Athletic and read my more sort of coherent words, I hope.
Subscribe to hear how Adam has no clue about Nkoulou.
Yeah, exactly. That's my next piece, I think. Do you know what happened to Nkoulou? It's like Crime Watch. Go to theathletic.com/rookeryend and you can get a discount currently of 33% on a new subscription, which makes it around about £3.33 a month, which is an absolute bargain.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Part of the Athletic Podcast Network. This is From the Rookery End.
So after the highs of Everton and 5-2. And that we didn't even mention the fact, you know, that it was historic. To win at Goodison Park is absolutely brilliant. And even better that Richarlison was there with his pigeon dance or whatever it is on the front of the programme. And then Watford go and win. That was brilliant. Anyway, so let's talk about Southampton. And, you know, I suppose it's a little bit after the Lord Mayor's, isn't it? The expectation levels will be really high. But I think that we've seen after, you know, the past week, the fact that they very nearly beat Chelsea with a rotated side in the Carabao Cup. And they've had some big results in terms of unexpectedness, much like our win at Everton, you know, drawing against Manchester City, drawing against Manchester United. They beat Leeds and we couldn't even compete with them. You know, we've got to be very, very careful in this game. And we haven't necessarily had the best record against Southampton at home, have we, Mike?
No, absolutely not. I'm still reeling from that. What was it, about 15 seconds when Shane Long put them ahead? I think that's still a Premier League record,
isn't
it?
Was it seven? It was 7 seconds, wasn't it?
Seven seconds,
I think.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Good. Happy to be so happy to be corrected on that. And it's interesting you mentioned there, Adam, a bit after the Lord Mayor show. And I think I really hope it isn't. I really hope that fans, you know, me included, everyone that's going to the game, grasp the mettle on this one. And actually, I looked at the Watford ticketing site today, and I don't think there's a ticket to be had in the home end for the Southampton game. If what I was looking at was correct, because we talked earlier about how Watford have announced themselves on the Premier League stage with that Everton performance. And I think perhaps this is the first time that Watford fans can go to a game in more than just hope, with a little bit of expectation. Hmm. But taking that expectation and turning it into excitement and recognising that, right, all of a sudden, it is now game on in the Premier League for Watford. It's a 3 o'clock kickoff. Liverpool was 12:30. Those games are always subdued. We knew we were probably in for a kicking. It's different now, and I think I'm hoping for a sort of a slightly different and improved, really, atmosphere on Saturday, because there is heightened expectation, but I think that can lead to a decent atmosphere. So I'm really, really looking forward to this one from that point of view, from a pure supporter's point of view, and I'm sure everyone listening is the same. But yeah, I think you're right to temper it with, you know, you look at the league table, Southampton are 16th with, well, I think they've got 8 points, something like that. They haven't set the world on fire. They've got that one win against Leeds, but a lot of draws and a lot of creditable draws at that. You know, you mentioned Manchester City. They got a draw with Man United as well, which may or may not prove to be a decent result.
Imagine keeping a clean sheet against Manchester City. Imagine that.
An impossibility. And just a little nod to the Watford ticket office, who have made Manchester City arguably one of the most recognisable and best squads on the planet. They've made it a Category C fixture, which means it's a fiver for kids, presumably with a nod to the fact that it's Halloween coming up, isn't it? That most of us are scarred by performances against Manchester City. I thought that was a lovely little tongue-in-cheek touch from the ticket office to make that a Cat C fixture.
I say Southampton for me is, you know, you're talking about in the context of the season there, Mike. I'm thinking about in context in the next step under Ranieri. What is it we need to get?
Yeah.
You know, it isn't necessarily, you know, forget the Liverpool game. It was, I can see what you guys are like, you know, exercise with him. We saw some great improvements. And as I said before, we saw, you know, where the advantage was, we took it. And you hope that, in terms of Southampton, for me, you know, league position means absolutely nothing at this point, from, you know, one place to the next. It's minute. I just want, you know, I see Southampton, you know, as the same sort of level as us, or at least the level I want us to be at. You know, so we need to compete with them. We need to compete with them and be as savvy as them and as clever as them. Because if we can be a little bit more savvy, a little bit more clever, and we get that win, I think that really sets the tone for the season. If we then go and lose to Manchester City in a few weeks' time, so be it. But it's about making sure when we play these teams that are us or slightly above us, if Ranieri's got them ticking properly, these are the games where we're going to be able to show what we can do. Maybe this is the game where we can show what we can do, but maybe something will come a cropper because we're still in that development stage under Ranieri. But you just want to make sure that we're competing at the same level as a team like Southampton.
Because I think to go back to your earlier point, John, about taking our opportunities, Southampton will feel under pressure. And whilst we're excited about this being an opportunity to kick on, make no mistake about it, Southampton fans will have this one highlighted as a real top opportunity for them to get 3 points. And if the game doesn't start well for them, like it didn't, well, the game started well for Everton, but as it game panned out, they didn't get the foothold in the fixture that they would have expected. They will start to feel that pressure. The manager, is he under a little bit of pressure? Potentially, it always seems to be there or thereabouts as to whether they're going to start looking elsewhere. So they are under pressure. So that does provide us with an opportunity. You know, they're more established in the Premier League than us. They've perhaps got a little bit more savvy. We've spoken about all their draws, so they're digging out results and hanging in there and racking up points, scoring the occasional goal here and there. So they've had a solid, if yet nowhere near spectacular season. So they're going to be, it's a real tough challenge, but a real opportunity as well. And that's where the sort of the buoyant mood of people like Josh King and the resurgent midfield and the defence with a little bit more confidence can perhaps really make an impact. What I really want us to do is go to school on perhaps the minutiae. Let's not give away so many free kicks. I thought we gave away a lot of free kicks on Saturday in relatively dangerous areas and with someone like Ward-Prowse who is more than capable of sticking them in from dead ball situations. I'd like us to be a bit more canny in that respect as well.
There's a couple of selection issues, I suppose, that we should really deal with. And one of the questions that came in, actually, which we can deal with now, which came in from Lou, and he said, what's the club stance on Backman Foster, given that Backman said that he'd want to leave in January if he's not playing? Isn't it a bit illogical to play someone who's making mistakes most weeks, that's his opinion, and leaving in 8 months' time? Now, obviously, Claudio Ranieri was asked prior to the Everton game about the Ben Foster situation in relation to, you know, the YouTube sort of hoo-ha that had sort of kicked up around that game. And he, at the time, didn't really seem to suggest that Ben Foster was going to be dropped, obviously, in relation to that. And I think he would be relatively happy with what happened at Everton. And I don't think that it would be a position to make a goalkeeping change, but I think that will be in the back of their minds to make maybe that transition back to Daniel Backman at some point. But I suppose at the moment with Claudio Ranieri coming in, he will just be thinking, look, is that a big issue? And I don't necessarily think that it is a significant issue at the moment. It may well be, and I think, you know, I think we all know that it is for Daniel Backman. He's an Austrian international. He wants to be playing, and he will feel a little bit hard done by. And he did speak quite strongly to the Austrian press last week about the situation and basically saying, well, look, he felt that it was all a bit of a mess, really. And I think we spoke about that in relation to Ben Foster and him sort of saying, oh, he's been dropped. But then we also found out that it was a knee injury and bloody, bloody, blah, and all that sort of stuff. So that's one of the issues that I think is just still bubbling around. But one thing that I wanted to say in terms of the left-back situation, we saw Liveramento, who played very well for Southampton in their last fixture, causing all sorts of problems down Southampton's right. So it'll be interesting to see how Ranieri deals with the left-back situation. Will Danny Rose come back in? Because it was a slight knock. I mean, that's about as sort of
vague.
vague, isn't it? I mean, a knock is a knock, isn't it? I mean, knock is like, oh, he had a knock in training, but he's absolutely fine. A slight knock. I mean, that's like is that a glance? I don't know what that is. But anyway, you know, did a ball hit him hard? I don't know, whatever it was. But so he had a slight knock, so he couldn't play. But that's a decision to be made. I think in terms of the front three, obviously Ismaïla Sarr will start on the right-hand side. And as we mentioned, that will be important for him to have a good performance once again, just to sort of go, look, don't forget who I am. I know I got taken off, but, you know, I am the man. But I do want to see him dominating. I want him getting at the left back. Go, go, go. You know, do what Cucho was doing on the left-hand side, do it on the right-hand side and do it more often. And then in the midfield, if that combination can work once again, Mike, as you said before, the momentum was coming and they were playing balls around the corner. There was just a little bit more intent, wasn't it? It's a bit more sort of focus. Let's get the ball forward. So that will be interesting to see how that all pans out. And then hopefully Jeremy Ngakia can play once again at right back and build on a good performance. But one other thing that I wanted to ask you, and Mike mentioned it right at the beginning when we started talking about Southampton, and we'll make this the last point on Southampton, but I wanted to ask John and Mike as well, jump in obviously. But what I have felt And this is also, I was reminded of it, sat at Goodison Park, which is a weird atmosphere, really, really weird atmosphere. You know, it was very flat at the beginning. They scored, they got excited, and then went flat again. It really, really flat. And it felt like there was just a murmur of noise, just murmur. It was almost like, like
Lords.
Bowls or, yeah, Lords, yeah, cricket, a cricket crowd, exactly. I must admit, I think the atmospheres, aside from Aston Villa, at Vicarage Road this season, there's always, and this has been, I mean, this has been an issue for years and years and years, really, since the Pozzos took over, or since post the Crystal Palace playoff final when the 1881 started, blah, 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 blah. Everyone is looking for the atmosphere to be created, if it is a little bit flat, by the 1881. That, I feel, just from my view, that hasn't been quite as vociferous this season, because I think I've sort of sensed nerves here and there. And what we need is, and I think hopefully we will get, because everyone will be feeling well, and also that the team hopefully will have more focus, is that it is going to be led by what is happening on the field. But in general terms, we are very reliant on that corner of the Graham Taylor and the Rookery to generate the noise. And I just wonder, is there anything that fans can do to just sort of spread the load a little bit? Do you both feel that as well?
I don't think we rely. When I speak to Roy, I always say to him, you know, the songs they sing, you're basically teaching the rest of the crowd what happens when things get good, because generally the Watford crowd aren't going to be singing the whole game, and they are very, very, very nervous at times. I don't think that's what we're not going to have this weekend. We're not going to have a nervous Watford crowd. You know, if we'd won that by 1-0 away at Everton, and it was a win, they would have not changed their feelings since Liverpool. But having seen such an end to that game, that can only have lifted them on Saturday and every day since. I don't expect them to be particularly nervous at the start of the game, and I hopefully they'll build into it, and an early goal will set them on fire.
An early goal for us, not for blooming Southampton.
No.
7 seconds. But no, I do agree with that. And I think, in fairness, you know, if you take my mood, for example, over the last month, which I think I stand by, I was grumpy because the performances were absolutely abysmal. So, in fairness, as a supporter, you haven't had much to sing and shout about over the last month. And I do think that, as you said, you used Everton as an example, Adam, they would have expected to beat us. I was trying to explain to the kids while they were quiet. It's because, well, they expect to win the game, and it's different when it's a big cup tie or a European match or your close rivals. The atmosphere is just, you don't decide it's going to be better. It just is because of the nature of the game. The reality is that I think Vicarage Road has, over the last, well, it's pretty quiet last year, obviously, but you know, I sit in the pretty much in the middle of the Elton John at the moment for work, and it's always the away fans you can hear, not the home crowd. And this is by no means a criticism at all of anyone, of Roy, the 1881, anyone that goes to the ground. It's not a criticism at all. Everyone goes to the ground to enjoy themselves and to enjoy it the best way they know how. But the reality is, it's not. It hasn't been noisy. And I do think the team have a. It's down to the team. If the team start playing well, if they start on the front foot, then it'll catch fire. I spoke to a Liverpool podcast, Red Men Liverpool podcast, and they were talking about the atmosphere at Vicarage Road when Watford won 3-0. And they said, you know, they still remember it as being one of the best atmospheres they'd ever been in. You know, the place almost came unglued, didn't it? So it can happen at Watford. It can be noisy. We've seen it and we've enjoyed it. But I think it does need to be led by the. I'll stick up for myself and fellow supporters. I think it does need to be led to a degree by on pitch. I think people will turn up on Saturday with a spring in their step, and I would just say to them, we know we've heard enough in whether it's interviews anecdotally, whether it's players we've spoken to on the podcast, they do hear it. It does make a difference, and it can make the difference. It can be that extra little that difference between winning a ball or not. So if you feel able to get behind the team, whether it's by joining in with a song, whether it's starting a song, whether it's just clapping and giving it a big old yawns, then do it, because I do think we're in it together this season. It's going to be a tough old journey. There's going to be big old bumps in the road, and it goes without saying that we all want the same thing. It goes without saying we're in it together. It goes without saying that we're a team as supporters. But I think if you think, oh, shall I get up and give it a bit of welly, then do it, because I think we know the players hear it, we know the players appreciate it, and yeah, the better the atmosphere, the better the chance. I think let's go for it. Basically, that's my advice. Says miserable Mike.
It reminded me a little bit of what happens at Elland Road, that there's just noise that just pops up all over the shop, just in little, and then they all sort of join up. And I think my point is more sort of like we need to all sort of do our bit a little bit. I can't obviously help in the press box, otherwise I get kicked out. But there are times where I just think, come on, let's, you know, it's just someone start something somewhere else, you know, and then it will all sort of build. So, but as we know, let's hope the performance sets the tone on Saturday against Southampton.
A Watford FC podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is From the Rookery End.
So we've spoken the positive sides of football fandom and the help that it can give the team on the field. I wanted to just sort of touch on a piece that I've done on The Athletic, which came out yesterday. And I really appreciate everyone's comments on it, because it's been well received. But I almost feel like I've just simply been the messenger for Kelly Summers and for Kate Lewis, who delivered a fantastic interview on the last episode of From the Rookery End, which I would recommend everyone. I'm sure so many of you already listened to it. From my point of view, and this is why I wrote the piece, it inspired me to write a piece about male football fans and the need for us to be allies. And I know that you touched on it in the podcast afterwards. But it's interesting for me, because it's sort of been a bit of a process over the last 6 months, I'd say. And it starts from going with no fans to then seeing fans back. And some of the experiences that I had covering England at the Euros, and predominantly I was outside the stadium, I wasn't necessarily going into the stadium at Wembley, but just seeing some of the atmosphere. And then obviously it bubbled up to a really nasty degree for the final. And some of the things that I was seeing there were pretty horrendous, just in terms of the over-the-top behaviour of fans. And then when I started coming back to games this season, there was a few things that I saw which I found really quite troubling. There was one incident when I was walking past the Oddfellows pub, which many people will be familiar with as Watford fans. That's a designated away fan pub. There was a woman there with a man, and she was sort of slightly down the alleyway, and there was Newcastle fans chanting something really horrendous. I heard it and I thought, well, what do I do? How do I help someone in that situation? And then I mentioned in the piece that there was also a social media clip, which was in one of the first matches of the season when Crystal Palace played at West Ham. And there was another chant about a sexually transmitted disease that West Ham fans were chanting directly at a woman that was sort of just over the way in the corner of a ground, which was horrendous as well. It was just like, what are we doing? What are we doing? And then I've heard some chants recently, and the final two words of it are, or the final few words of it is a sex offender. And I just find that chant that I've heard from a number of fans, not
including
only
Watford fans,
you know, including Watford fans, you know, not only insensitive, it's potentially defamatory, and it is just highly offensive, and it is making light of something that we all know is of the utmost seriousness. Having heard the interview with Kelly and with Kate, and some of the behaviour that makes women feel uncomfortable at football, that we just need to be, as men, and this is just me speaking to men, we just need to be better. We need to be better allies to female fans. And that is with what is being sung, how we are behaving, and not only during games, But in the lead up to games, you know, that incident going past the Oddfellows pub, that was, you know, pre-game. Then after the game, the way that women sometimes feel that they are, you know, under threat, and the way that some male fans have behaved, especially, you know, Kelly was talking about the fact that she was scared at an away game and, you know, had to end up running back to her car. That should never be like that. So I just wanted to put it out there, but I feel I was inspired. It wasn't, you know, this wasn't just stuff that was coming from me, obviously, because I'm not a woman and I'm not in this situation, but I just felt a sense of responsibility to just stick a flag in it. You know, just try and do something and try and, I suppose, just be an ally by putting it out there on a platform, I suppose.
For me, you know, we did that interview, you know, I said to Kelly and Kate, could you do it yourselves? I didn't want to be a bloke asking them questions. What's it like to be a girl? That was for the podcast. But we know we have to have those conversations. What is it like for you to be small, tall, that colour, that gender, whatever it is, and trying to understand just what it's like for someone in different situations to us. And we are the masses in football because we are men, adult middle-aged men. I didn't want it to be seen as there's nothing wrong with being lads. You know, back in the day, I did fancy myself of going to live with Gary and Tony from the Men Behaving Badly, and I tried my best to be a lad reading Loaded magazine. Lots of references there for anyone over the age of 40, by the way. It's just that fact that, you know, there is this, as young men, they have the desire to act and to be part of a gang. They just need to sort of learn a little bit better about when and how in very crucial situations, particularly in away games. And my favourite, you know, message we got after after the interview, a fan who had been bringing his girlfriend, just recently bringing his girlfriend to away games. I mean, that's the true test of a relationship, isn't it? He said how he's had a really good time. She's had a really good time at away games. And, you know, things seem to be changing from his experience. But we know everyone's experience at every single game is always different.
I know that you absolutely didn't mean it like this, John, but you said they need to look at how they behave at football and at away games. And it's we. It really is we, because I've, like so many people, and I'm hugely grateful to Kelly and Kate, A, for giving up their time, and B, being able to speak so openly and honestly and freely about what is clearly an upsetting and difficult and worrying situation. And I've thought about it long and hard since then. And I've realised, you know, to be perfectly frank, that sometimes I haven't moderated my behaviour accordingly at football. For, you know, I'm not saying I'm a beard up lunatic causing mayhem everywhere I go, but I might have, for example, registered that there's a family relatively close by, and perhaps might have used some slightly fruity language and thought afterwards, oh, come on, Mike, you should have known better. And I'm a skinhead, basically, wears a baseball cap and a Lyle and Scott jacket, and could look like a fairly dodgy character to a female on the other side of the road. Do I do everything I can to hold myself in a way that shows that I'm not a threat? Is there anything I can do to put people's mind at rest? And to be perfectly honest, I don't think about it anywhere near enough, if at all, until we've had these sort of conversations. So I don't think it's a case of they. I think it's a case of we. The first thing that everyone can do is take responsibility for your actions. And obviously there's a whole societal issue here, but we're talking about football. When you go to the game, take responsibility for yourself. Would your mum be proud of you, what you did at the football that day? And, you know, mums wouldn't necessarily, and dads wouldn't necessarily be proud of the way that you go over the top when you celebrate a goal. But that's fine. You know, it is a little bit of, you know, you go over the top at the football. That's part of the enjoyment of it, is that territorial partisan experience. Part of being a tribe, part of belonging, part of supporting a club, part of being on the same team. You know, we're talking about Everton on Saturday. I was out of the house for 17 hours to go up there and hopefully see Watford win. And the joy on going to an away game, rubbing the opposition's nose in it, quite frankly, and coming away is brilliant. But you can enjoy that without going over the top. You can be partisan. You can get behind your side. You can be loyal and fiercely so, without it being making life difficult for any other person, any other group of people, any other section of society. And I think we all just need to check ourselves when we leave the house to go to the football, say, right, Mike, make sure that you behave appropriately so that you're not going to upset a family. You're not going to upset a female. You're not going to upset anyone, because everyone, I said it on Saturday, football is a magical, beautiful, crazy, over the top, exciting thing. But everyone has the right to go through those emotions. It's not just the reserve of 6 foot blokes who can handle themselves, whether they do it on purpose or not. I'm sure in most cases, it's the last thing on their mind is to really make someone feel genuinely unsafe. But the reality is that is the knock-on effect. So I think we all have to take it upon ourselves. You know, sometimes I see people tweet, oh, there's a couple of rows in front of Rookery Mike at the game. And I think, oh, God. Is the next tweet going to be that he swears a lot more at the ground than he does on the podcast.
One of my favourite things of a foot match I go with you and Arlo is Arlo telling you off for swearing and you saying, I'm really, really sorry. There's that switch in roles which is right in those situations.
There's just a couple of things that I wanted to just sort of touch on from the comments, actually, to the piece on The Athletic. And, you know, I mentioned that the incident that was on social media, the Crystal Palace and West Ham game. And this touches on it's very difficult to know who is being offended by situations, but it's not necessarily the person at the centre of it. It's worrying about those around and the impact that it has on maybe the silent females that are in the crowd or the youngsters or whoever it is. But someone actually got in touch on The Athletic and said, I know the person who was being abused by the West Ham fans at the Crystal Palace game. And she wasn't necessarily upset or intimidated. This is what this guy Gary was saying. And I just wanted to almost sort of also highlight the fact that, yes, it didn't affect that person in question, or she said that it didn't affect her. But it's really important on the impact of chanting things that are offensive about women. And who might be listening and what sort of impact that has on people. And I thought that also what was really interesting, a lot of people on the article commented and said, are you basically telling us that if we hear something from either boozed up or maybe even more group of football fans and we think that that's not right, that we should almost be self-policing and going up to them? Because we don't necessarily want to risk getting our heads kicked in by trying to police these sort of things. And that isn't really the point. And I completely understand that sometimes you are in a helpless situation. And, you know, when I was walking past that pub, I thought, oh, I can't go in there and take on a whole load of Newcastle fans and say, sorry, guys, by the way, could you just stop chanting that? I found that slightly unsavoury on behalf of that lady who I didn't know either. But what the point that I thought Kate made really, really strongly is that this is about these sort of changes of behaviour growing within smaller groups. Calling out your boys is what Kate said. And I thought that was the best way of putting it, that we all need to be responsible for our mates and being able to go, oh, you know, Dave, don't do that. Or come on, mate, let's not do that. And even if you are saying that and it carries on, if you're not doing it, that's one person not doing it. And then if someone else sees someone else not doing it, then it has a knock-on effect. That sort of herd mentality needs to just take a step back when it is being highly offensive. And I just think that that is something that we need to just sort of check ourselves sometimes and you know, talk about it. And hopefully the article's done that. And a lot of people have also said, I don't really see the problem with the sex offender chant. Okay.
Let's leave that there, lads. If you're going to think there's nothing offended about it, brilliant. There's the problem right there.
Just think about it. That's all I would say. Just think about it. That is all... That's all we can say.
There's many other words that rhyme with bender. Go and use rhymezone.com, lads, and figure out a better chant.
I went to see the Beastie Boys a long time ago, and someone was giving out stickers on the way into the venue, and I've still got that sticker. It's probably one worth mentioning now. On that sticker, it says four words: "Don't be a dick." And yeah. I think the reality is we all know when we're being a dick. Mm. If we can commit to making those occasions less frequent and actively trying to stop ourselves from acting like that or our mates, then it's a step in the right direction, isn't it? It's not difficult. It's not complicated. I think it's just flicking that switch as you put your shoes on to leave the game to go to the football. Let's make sure that my actions don't impact on anyone else today whatsoever, unless it's positive.
Mike, I think that is a great way to end. And if anyone hasn't listened to the interview with Kate and Kelly, do go back to the last episode of From the Rookery End and have a listen. And you can get all the details of if you want to be part of the Women of Watford FC, which is a supporters group that has been set up to ultimately get Watford fans who are female all together. But also it acts as a networking group, especially the Facebook group Kate was talking about. So look them up on Facebook in terms of being able to meet up before games, maybe car shares and things like that, just to help around the game as well, making female fans feel safer, especially for away matches. And it doesn't necessarily have to be just women joining this group. It can be fathers of daughters who might want to start going to games by themselves in the future, perhaps, and things like that. So there's plenty of options, and hopefully this can go from strength to strength. And hopefully the article that has been on The Athletic and, you know, being on a bigger platform as well can really help the whole thing really kick on with great success. So I really appreciated both Kate and Kelly coming on last week, and for you boys for, you know, giving them once again the platform to do that interview, which inspired me. So, you know, well done, boys. And well done in general for being on the podcast this week. John, thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Mike as well. Look forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Come on, you horns. I wonder, I'll turn you on to a bit more Norwegian rock as well, Ed, when I see you.
No, you won't. Right. Anyway, let's move on and let's look forward to the football. And quick reminder, by the way, if you do want to be part of The Athletic, head to theathletic.com/rookeryend and you can get 33% off if you are a new subscriber. Fingers crossed for another big performance on Saturday. Take care, everyone.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.